but not your possessions. So are you naked? That's how I read that. Your spirit would be naked.
I mean, I think it would be like a ghost where you just kind of have like the spectrally aspects. So it's like,
yeah,
I've never seen ghost dick to be just,
I don't know. It resembles your mortal form in almost every way.
Almost every way, except for your dick. That's what they're trying to get just across.
Ken doll or Barbie doll down there.
Yeah, exactly. Okay.
You just get a spectral bathrobe like all ghosts.
Yeah. or just, yeah, go ahead. You're naked. That's fine. And that frightens your enemies. Intimidates them.
Welcome to Monsters and Multiclass, your Dungeons & Dragons fix. I'm Kevin Odie.
I'm Jared Bornicle.
And I'm Will Milton.
And we'll be hanging out with you for a while to talk about anything and everything D&D related. On this episode, we are taking a look at the new Warlock subclass added in Van Richten's Guide to Ravenloft, the Undead. Which is basically the Undying, but redone because the Undying is terrible. So, take it away, Kevin. Thanks, Kevin. So,
I was wondering how you were going to handle that. That was the best way possible.
The handoff to myself.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, the new Warlock class, the Undead. It really is just, I think they wanted to redo the Undying. I don't even remember where the Undying came out.
It was actually Xanathar's. Pretty sure, yeah. So it wasn't like a Sword Coast Adventure Guide fluke where they had just like no good subclasses.
Right. And the Undying's pretty much crap. We've talked about it a few different times. We just like get mad about the subclass. So the flavor of this is
I'm sorry, yes. Just to correct myself, it is not in Xanathar's. I will continue to look this up, but I don't want to spread misinformation.
Yeah. Yes, let us know when you find it. So for the Undead Warlock, you made a pact with a deathless being, a creature that defies the cycle of life and death, forsaking its immortal shell, so it might eternally pursue its unfathomable ambitions. So it's another edgy death subclass. Like they all have one. The Warlock had the Undying, and now they also have the Undead to fix it. You straddle the line between life and death, and you gain power from a deathless being, and it comes with a terrible price because you see mortals' lives just go, become nothing to you because you're ageless and you're hoping to get their power and teach you how to be deathless. It's pretty standard straddle the line class, subclass.
Yeah, but this one doesn't let me have my limbs fall off and reattach them, so.
That's true.
Yeah, so this one already loses points. Undying was in Sword Coast Adventure Guide, so
there you go.
It now gets a pass for being horrible because every subclass in that was the worst.
Wasn't the Death Monk okay?
Maybe one was okay.
Yeah. And then Blade Singing was okay-ish, and then they really fixed it. But
yeah.
All right, these are the type of patrons, like Acerak was probably the most common one. That's the kind of the big bad guy in Tomb of Annihilation, and there's the adventure that came out in with the dinosaurs in the jungle.
That's Tomb of Annihilation. Oh, yeah, that's Tomb of Annihilation.
That is Tomb of, I was thinking Tomb of Horrors, but he's both. In like the famous Deadly Dungeon Tomb of Horrors, that's Acerak, and then in the campaign Tomb of Annihilation, it's also Acerak. The vampire tyrant, Kos the Bloody Handed, the Githyanki Lich Queen, Vlakith. I'm going to stop trying to read these.
Yeah, stop stuff it, because like you're just going to get people upset that we're pronouncing them wrong. And I mean, maybe you know a little bit about the lore, but that's, I'm sure there's deep dives into all of these people, and I am not equipped to handle it, so.
No. That's not what we do here. Yeah, or it's also very easy to just come up for your setting. I'm sure a patron that would fit this. Very setting agnostic, which is nice. So, first level feature. When they get an expanded spell list, these spells are added to their Warlock spells. They are able to pick them if they want. They don't automatically get these. At first level, Bane and False Life. At second level, Blindness/Deafness and Phantasmal Force. Third level, Phantom Steed and Speak with Dead. Fourth level, Death Ward and Great Invisibility. And for fifth level spells, Anti-Life Shell and Cloud Kill. Bit of a mixed bag, but useful stuff there.
I mean,
I love Blindness, Deafness.
Yeah, blind steps is great. Bane is not usually my first choice of debuffs, but it is pretty good. And as you upcast it, being able to choose more creatures is also good. So, you know, that's fine. I guess I'd probably take Bane because it's fitting. What's the other one at first level? Oh, False Life.
False Life
doesn't really feel too great. It's not the best way to get temp HP. False Life, for anyone who doesn't know, is you give yourself 1d4 plus 4 temp HP for the duration, and when upcast, you get an additional 5 temp HP for each spell slot above first. It's not bad, but I don't really think I'm going to take this spell over some other options.
Right, or use some of your limited spell slots.
Right. Interestingly, you can get this as an at-will spell, limited to first level, limited to yourself as an invocation.
Yeah, that's... I don't think I'd even take that invocation, to be honest, but it's...
It scales terribly.
Yeah.
Especially when you're stuck at first level. This one...
24 plus 4.
You're looking at 25. It's not bad.
Yeah.
Not great, though.
Yeah, as you said, Blindness Deafness is fantastic. I think a bit of a sleeper spell. It seems like... Mm-hmm. I don't hear it brought up all the time, but that is like a definite take, in my opinion.
Yes.
Phantasmal Force is pretty good. I wouldn't hold on to it long.
Maybe get creative with it, yeah.
My issue is that it doesn't upscale. So, again, with Warlocks, you gotta pay attention to that, because if you're casting Phantasmal Force at 5th level, that's a waste of time. It's just not good enough to justify that.
Right, right. They get access to greater invisibility, which is a fantastic spell.
Mm-hmm.
Can't complain about that.
Any idea why they get Phantom Steed? Do you guys know Phantom Steed? Because I had to look that one up. That was a new one for me.
Horse.
It's not spooky. It doesn't have to be spooky.
It says Phantom.
Quasi-real horse-like creature.
Okay.
Appears on the ground in unoccupied space. That sounds spooky.
All right.
If a quasi-real horse-like creature appeared in your room, would you think this is not a spooky situation? Would you just be like, all right, this is normal? No, you'd be like, wow.
If even a normal horse just appeared in my room, I'd be pretty freaked out. But that's not the point when you live in a world with magic. There are certain things that are extra creepy. I don't know if this is one of them. But my question is really, why would a warlock ever take a third level spell that is generally a ritual for wizards? That's the only other class that gets this is wizards.
And that's a really good point.
It's a ritual. Yeah. The whole point of it is you get to Gandalf for a little bit, where you just get your little Shadowfax, tie-in, and you run really quick along the plains. That's it. It has a speed of 100 feet, can travel 10 miles in an hour, 13 miles at a fast pace. When it ends, you got a minute to get off. You can't just put your entire party on the horse, though. What's the point of this? You're not going to have mounted combat as a warlock. I don't see the benefit there.
No. Yeah, that would be a pretty terrible warlock take.
So, for the wizard, at least it's a ritual. So it's like, okay, I'm never going to learn this spell specifically, but the DM's looking for some spell scrolls to give the wizard. And they're like, hey, here's Phantom Steed. If the opportunity ever arises, you've got it as a ritual, and you're going to be pretty happy that you've got it. But otherwise, it's never going to come up.
Right.
So, yeah, that's a bad spell. Speak with Dead, I don't really think that's too great for a warlock, just because...
No, it definitely has its uses, but yes. Yeah. It's fitting for this subclass, but it's not a great pick for a warlock in your limited spell slots and automatic upcasts.
Right. Now, I'd almost... Now that I say it out loud, or we're talking about it out loud, it's actually not that fitting for this warlock class, because this is all about not dying, not about communicating with the dead. Very big difference. It just because it's death adjacent doesn't mean that they're a fitting spell.
That's true.
Death but ward I think, is fitting.
Yes. Where, yeah, for 8 hours, if a creature were to drop to zero, it drops to one instead, and then the spell ends.
Great spell. I like Death Ward. Speak with Dead, I don't think the flavor's
there. Again, though, I don't know if Death Ward is great for your warlock.
At fourth level, I mean, you're between a fourth or fifth level spell. Actually, I thought about this too. So the time where Death Ward is great for a warlock is before a short rest when you still have a spell slot.
That's a very good point. Yeah. Because, yeah, last 8 hours.
Yeah, so then it's like a fantastic use of it. Otherwise, you're totally right. I wouldn't start the day and be like, let's burn some spell slots with Death Ward, guys. But right. You get through your first encounter, you saved yourself a spell slot, go for that Death Ward. It's concentration free, and you're going to be, you know, not using that spell slot on anything else. And I don't really like Anti-Life Shell.
Yeah, I was just rereading it. It's been a while since I've looked at it. Basically, it just keeps living creatures out, right?
Yeah, and that's...
But they can still make ranged attacks through the barrier.
They can make ranged attacks. If they have reach, they can make the attack. They can make spell attacks. It's, like, really good for a preparation spellcaster, because if you're a druid and you know that you're going to fight a big old beastie beast, maybe you want your anti-life shell. If
right.
You don't know that, you don't want to waste one of your precious known spells on something that's useful once every 6 months.
Right, yeah.
And then last one I'll mention
is... Yeah.
You're just rereading it?
Yes.
It's really limiting. And I'm putting in that same category where we found like Wall of Force recently. It's like, oh, there's actually a lot of limitations to this that don't just make it like a little bubble that protects you. That's not what it is. It's a little bubble that protects you from barbarians, but that's about it.
Yeah, as a druid, this has been sitting in my... I'm glad this is in my spell list, but I have yet to prepare it.
Right.
I see the situation where this is incredibly useful. I have yet to encounter it.
Honestly, it probably would have been useful in our last fight, because there literally was a barbarian, and you could have stood next to his target, and now he can't get in there and make melee attacks. Could have been useful there.
Yeah.
Not to like...
Minus the fact that I still would have gotten attacked by the other menagerie of ranged fighters.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes.
And it's a fifth level spell.
Yep.
Which is high.
So, yeah, it's not an end-all be-all. I wouldn't use it too much. Probably not going to pick it. Cloud Kill, though, combined with all of the push and pull aspects of Eldritch Blast, the Agonizing Grasp? I don't remember
Grasp
what
of Hadar.
And Repelling Blast.
Repelling Blast.
Is the other one. So, yeah, combined with all of those could be really cool, because then you could just, like, keep somebody in the Cloud Kill as it starts drifting away, or just maneuver them in some position. So
yeah, Cloud Kill's the one you cast it. It's a 20-foot radius sphere, and then it just like moves away from you a bit every turn. It does 5-8 poison damage to people caught in it that failed. It's a decent spell, covers a lot of area. Same time, 5-8's nothing crazy at a fifth level spell, but it could get up there
for 10 minutes.
Yeah, that's true. It lasts for 10 minutes.
And if you're like in a...
And it heavily obscures the area.
Right.
Effectively making people blind.
And then once it hits a wall, it just kind of like stops there, right?
So if I am not sure.
It's not really explicated, unfortunately. I found use in this big stationary enemies. I know this really screwed up a Kraken who was stuck in that water temple.
So cool.
Hallways. Any enemy, like, oh, the skeleton, the murderous ghouls in the hallway are about to kill you. It's like, nah, no, they're not.
Right.
This is going to lawnmower them.
Right.
That's a good way of putting it. It's a lawnmower spell.
Yeah, so it's 20-foot radius and it moves 10 feet. And so you will definitely can get the same target in it on multiple turns.
Mm-hmm.
If you have ways to kind of keep them in that area.
Exactly. Everybody starts switching to their, like, any ability that lets you push and keep them where the Cloud Kill will continue are going to be pretty worthwhile.
Right.
So, yeah, I just, Cloud Kill's a fun one, at the very least.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's 5d8 every single turn, too.
Right. It's con save, though, right?
Yeah, and yeah, they take half as much on a success.
Yeah. Yep, and it also affects creatures that don't need a breathe or anything, so that's nice.
Yeah, that's what really screwed up that Kraken fight, because it was all the individual tentacles, and you're like, breathe this in, bitch. Loved it. That was great. That was a great use. I don't feel bad, because that was a fight intended to TPK, so.
Right. We got away.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, some decent options.
Yeah,
some of these expend a spell lists are really crap, especially when it's like you have to like specifically pick them over something else as opposed to just getting them. But there's some of these I could see absolutely picking.
Definitely agree.
All right, so then the first feature is form of dread, first level. You manifest an aspect of your patron's dreadful power. As a bonus action, you transform for 1 minute. You gain the following benefits while transformed. You gain 10 hit points equal to 1d10 plus your warlock level. Once during each of your turns, when you hit a creature with an attack roll, you can force it to make a wisdom saving throw, and if the saving throw fails, the target is frightened of you until the end of your next turn. You are immune to the frightened condition. You can do this a number of times equal to your proficiency bonus. You regain it all on a long rest, and just some flavor text about, yeah, the appearance kind of reflects your patron, where if you have like a mummy patron, you'll be covered in glowing glyphs and desert winds and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Have fun with it.
Yeah. Get a vampire, get the femto vibes. Just that's for the Berserk fans out there.
I say femto.
Yeah. Imagine like Batman, but yeah, okay. We'll just go with that.
Sure.
Get your bat wings. But for the ability, you know, it's okay. I think it's okay. It's a bonus action to transform, not an action. I like that.
Right.
I hate when it's a full action to do these types of things. 1d10 plus your warlock level and temp HP. That's like the main thing you're getting out of this, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
And that's...
Yeah, then you can add the frightened condition, which we talked about last time, actually, with College Spirits, is not the greatest condition. But being able to just kind of do this for free, you're not like using up another resource, such as your Bardic Inspiration to do it or something, or which obviously they don't have, or a spell slot to do it, to just add the frightened condition, just on when you have an attack, make him frightened. Okay, you'll probably then just be imposing a lot of disadvantage.
Right, and that's yeah. Going to be the main benefit, is hopefully they have disadvantage on their attacks and can't move closer to you. So, yeah.
Right.
If it works, it works. If it doesn't work, I don't think you're going to be upset that you spent a bonus action to get into this form. And even if you just didn't frighten anything for the entire combat, which is unlikely, at some point something's going to fail, you at least got your 1d10 plus warlock level in temp HP.
Right. Yeah, the temp HP does not go away, I assume.
In, like, after the transformation
after goes the away? Minute, yeah. Like, the phrasing is, you gain the following benefits of well-transformed, and you transform for 1 minute.
So, yeah, it would go away.
But it's just saying, you think?
Yeah, because you gain the following benefits okay. while transformed. So, once you're not transformed, you don't gain these benefits anymore. That's how I read it.
But it's a gain, which is just like an instantaneous effect. You gain it, and then you have it. If it's a well-transformed thing, then it's saying, like, every round you're going to gain it, which is obviously not it. So, I don't know.
I'm going to stick with my rationale on it. You stick with yours. And when we have an undead actually at the table, we can argue about it more.
Well, tweet at Jeremy Crawford.
No. We'll scream at him and hope that Twitter picks it up and that he replies.
That's the help. 19 tweets later. So did we get an answer? I don't know, man.
And then being immune to the frightened condition, fine.
When it comes up, it's great. You're going to be happy you have it. Just a free condition immunity. Not even like advantage on being frightened. Just full-on immunity. Cool.
Right. And if you already are frightened and then activate this, I would imagine that would end that condition.
Yeah, definitely.
So I would rule that.
Gain immunity. So, yeah.
Right. So, yeah, solid first level feature. Very flavorful, nice little benefits. No complaints.
Yeah, most of the time warlock abilities, the first one's like pretty cool, but it's not playstyle defining. So this is in line. The Fathomless was almost outside of that.
Right, with the tentacle things. What was the other warlock in?
The genie, where you could change around your damage type.
No, the genie was you had the bottled respite and...
Oh, again, not playstyle defining.
I think you could do extra damage. I don't know. Pull up the episode.
Ooh, like, should I do the thing? Watcher. There you go. Go yeah. Watch the episode. You tell yeah. us what we said. Or just the book that has the actual information.
Right.
But it's not important right now. I will stand by that. I don't think there's, besides the Hexblade, there's not too many where...
The Hexblade is...
in a league of its own. Yes.
Undying, though. You can spare the dying, and zombies are less inclined to beat you up.
Oh, no. It's bad.
Already better, yeah. Already doing better.
But you know what?
Yeah, anything we say about this class, positive or negative, it doesn't matter because it's so much better than the Undying. It's not even funny.
And I definitely want to give the props to Wizards of the Coast for just redoing a subclass because it sucked. And they saw that it sucked and they said, let's make it better because it's cool flavor. People want to play this and it's just not good. So, you know, if anybody listening cares, that's good. Encourage that positivity around the fact that they fix something that sucked.
Right. All right. Then next, you get Grave Touched at 6th level. The Patron's Power have a profound effect on your body and magic. You don't need to eat, drink, or breathe. In addition, once during each of your turns, when you hit a creature with an attack roll and roll damage against the creature, you can replace the damage type with necrotic damage. While you are using your Form of Dread, you could roll one additional damage die when determining the necrotic damage the target takes. So not needing to eat, drink, or breathe, I think it actually, and certain campaigns could start coming up a lot.
Right.
Depends on the situation.
Little campaign dependent, but that's okay.
Yeah, but like, I mean, you can't drown, so it's kind of, you know, you're good in water, things like that.
It's flavorful.
Yeah.
So at the very least, you know, everybody's sitting around eating a feast and you're like, no, I don't eat. And you just get to have that edgy moment.
Right. switching your damage type to necrotic. There's a few situations.
I was just going to say, for a class like the Warlock, it doesn't really matter.
Right, because you're most likely probably going to be doing a lot of force damage.
From what? What gives the Warlock force damage?
I think it's Toll the Dead.
Ah, yes. Toll the Dead.
Yes. No, Eldritch Blast. So it's with an attack roll. So like save spells, you can't add this on or anything. Yeah, most likely if you're a Warlock and you're this subclass, not the Hexblade, doing an attack roll, you're probably doing force damage.
Yeah.
And it's like, force damage is so rarely resisted, just needing to switch to necrotic. You know. Who knows?
Yeah.
But then, well, you have the Form of Dread up. If you will want to start doing that, because then you get to roll an additional die. So then this is once per turn. So like an Eldritch Blast could then become 2d10.
Yep. And if you crit, 4d10. Because this one would crit, because you're rolling an additional damage die when determining the damage. It's not saying, and then they take an additional necrotic damage die or whatever.
Yeah.
So this damage would crit. And combines with Eldritch Blast, as long as you're in that Form of Dread, that's really good.
Yeah, and I can actually see playing the Undead Warlock as a melee Warlock. Pick Pack of the Blade.
Yeah.
I think that could be okay. That could be fun. They get to temp HP and stuff, and then they could switch their like slashing damage from their Greatsword or whatever. I think they take invocations to be able to do that, but...
Yeah, and then...
Do they get proficiency in that?
Proficiency in...
Like a greatsword?
I'm
blanking there, how Pact of the Blade works. I know it's just like the base Warlock wouldn't.
Only if you go Hexblade can you take any weapon. Pact of the Blade is somewhat limited, I believe. One-handed weapons.
Well, that's Hexblade, is one hand.
Is it?
Oh, man.
Yeah, or you can make your Pact weapon... your Hexblade weapon, and that's how you get around it.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
You create a pack weapon. You could choose the form this melee weapon takes each time you create it. See the weapon section. You're proficient with it while you wield it. This weapon counts as magical for the purpose of... Yep.
All right.
Yeah.
So
yeah, you could get any weapon you want. Any melee weapon.
Yeah, and I think that would make Frightened probably a little bit better, because if you are... kind of right playing there. The tank, then you want that frightened condition on creatures so that they have disadvantage against you. Or you can.
I said you'd be in melee. I'm not saying you're going to be the tank. You still have light armor.
Fair.
But, and a D6 No D8 hit die.
D8, and once you use that form, a D10 plus your Warlock level in temp HP.
Right.
And once those go away, you use your False Life, obviously.
Right. And don't certain dwarves get like medium armor proficiency? Just do that.
Yeah, I don't see a dwarf going. Or take the
medium armored feat. Nah, that could be fun.
Nah, a dwarf wouldn't play this subclass. I don't have any reason why.
Just no, okay.
Yeah.
Just,
no.
I refuse to elaborate further.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right. That would be a good.
Yeah, or there's feats to do it. All right, and then at 10th, you get Necrotic Husk. Your connection to undeath and necrotic energy now saturates your body. You have resistance to necrotic damage. If you are transformed using your form of dread, you instead become immune to necrotic damage. Just right away, I know necrotic doesn't come up a ton, but also immunity is very rare for PCs. You do not see that much.
Yeah, and
so that's pretty neat.
And in the setting that this is intended for, I would expect necrotic and frightened conditions to come up a lot more. So
that's a good point.
This in a Ravenloft setting seems even stronger than it normally is.
Right. For sure. All right. And so in addition to that, this is all part of the same ability. In addition, when you would be reduced to 0 hit points, you could use a reaction to drop to 1 hit point instead and cause your body to erupt with deathly energy. Each creature of your choice that is within 30 feet of you takes necrotic damage equal to 2d10 plus your Warlock level. You then gain 1 level of exhaustion. And once you use this reaction, you can't do so until you finish 1d4 long rests. Not talking mechanics, that's just cool as fuck.
Yeah, yeah.
Almost go down and then and burst out necrotic energy. And
even if you didn't come back up with 1 HP, I would say that's awesome. The fact that you the fact that you do get 1 HP after it and you're still up, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, the 1 level of exhaustion is a little rough, but not too bad.
Yeah. I mean, I'll say that's kind of dependent on the situation. I love the fact that there's some choice to it, or at least some potential negativity, because you can use your reaction. This doesn't automatically happen like with orcs. What is it?
Half-orcs.
Yeah, half-orcs resilience, whatever it's called, that just no matter what, they drop to 0, they get to 1. This, you need your reaction, which you probably have as a warlock, and you should definitely be aware of when you're getting low in HP to hold
that
on.
Suck.
Hold on to your reaction.
Yeah, I'll take a swing at him.
Oh, I missed. Oh, well. each creature of your choice that's within 30 feet of you, that's always a plus. I feel like we've seen...
Wait, it's not everyone.
What?
Disagree.
Okay, all right.
I think it's funnier when it's not that. I also think it's funnier. I missed the Phoenix Warlock, which they just buried that somewhere and never told anyone about it.
Which one?
The Phoenix Sorcerer.
There we go. Phoenix Sorcerer.
Which was a UA exploded that never went anywhere.
Yes, yeah. That was awesome. And you came back up with 1 HP. That was your Phoenix. Yeah. It only made sense. That was like a 14th level ability. That was a fun one. It's just... entire class based around fire was stupid.
Way too limited.
It was not great. Yeah. Especially sorcerer spell list, but that's neither here nor there. So I think the damage is pretty good. 2d10 plus your warlock level, this you get at 10th level. So starts with, it's an average damage of 22. That's pretty good against a lot of creatures if you've got a lot around you. I would say that at the point that you are almost at 0 HP or that you're at 0 HP, 22 damage can be the difference between a creature staying up or going down.
Absolutely.
So this very much so, just in a real world setting, I am expecting this to be a lifesaver many, many times.
Yeah. And there's no save. It just happens.
Yeah, that's right.
The damage, which is fantastic. Yeah, no dex save or something like that. So no, this is great. I love the feature. Very flavorful. All of it. The resistance to necrotic and everything and immunity. And
what is nice is you don't have to have your form of dread up for this to occur.
Right.
So there's no like limiting factor there where, oh, you didn't, dread up this time. So the thing that I don't know if we mentioned just yet is that you can't do it again until you finish 1d4 long rests. I actually don't really think that's necessary.
Yeah, I think just once per long rest would be okay.
They did it with the genies subclass where that was casting a sixth level spell. The limited wish was 1d4. That felt fitting because a sixth level spell for free is like a really strong ability.
Mm-hmm.
This is strong, but it's not going to come up every single combat day anyways. Or sorry, encounter day.
Right. So, and yeah, it almost doesn't matter then.
Right. It's like, are you really going down every single day? And if so, you probably have other issues.
Right. Congratulations on finding a way to spam this ability, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Oh, that actually... Okay. That is kind of a good tactic. If the warlock was at like 5 HP and you saw a good opportunity to get them to zero in order to trigger this, I would totally attack the warlock just to get this explosion off.
That's...
Yeah, it's a good idea, right? That's what you're thinking. You're thinking, yeah, that's the smartest thing you've ever said.
Yeah, murdering the warlock to make him explode. That's...
You know, yeah. Oh, he already used his reaction. He already used his reaction. Oh, God. Fuck! Fuck!
More realistically, if he's that low, if they're that low, they probably already are being hit. And so just let the monster do it.
Yeah. But in the instance where I'm just doing that thing where I create a really specific scenario for my own entertainment, so please bear with me. But let's say you're fighting Strahd, who follows the party around. That's very much a thing of his. He knows the party's abilities. If he got the warlock low and then he's like, no, I'm going to leave you right where you're at because I don't want you to explode on me. He's got immunity to necrotic. This is a dumb scenario, but let's keep going. All right. You know, you just have the warlock basically run up to him and become a ticking time bomb. That's funny to me. And that's, sure. That's all that matters. It would give me a chuckle.
All right. All right, moving on. 14th level, the capstone of the subclass, Spirit Projection. Your spirit can become untethered from your physical form. As an action, you can project your spirit from your body. The body you leave behind is unconscious and in a state of suspended animation. Your spirit resembles your mortal form in almost every way, replacing your game statistics, but not your possessions. So are you naked? That's how I read that. Your spirit would be naked.
I mean, I think it would be like a ghost where you just kind of have like the spectrally aspects. So it's like,
yeah,
I've never seen ghost dick to be just,
I don't know. Pretty it resembles your there. Mortal form in almost every way.
Almost every way, except for your dick. That's what they're trying to get just across.
Ken doll or Barbie doll down there.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. You just get a spectral bathrobe, like all ghosts.
Yeah. or just, yeah, go ahead. You're naked. That's fine. And that frightens your enemies, intimidates them.
Right. Anyways, any damage or other effects that apply to your spirit or physical body affects the other. Your spirit can remain outside your body for up to 1 hour or until your concentration is broken, as if concentrating on a spell. When your projection ends, your spirit returns to your body, or your body magically teleports to your spirit space. Your choice, which is neat.
I missed that when I first read it. That is neat. Yeah,
so it's kind of like a teleportation. While projecting your spirit, you gain the following benefits. Your spirit and body gain resistance to bludgeoning, piercing, and slashing damage. When you cast a spell of the conjuration or necromancy school, the spell doesn't require verbal or somatic components or material components that lack a gold cost. You have a flying speed equal to your walking speed and can hover. You can move through creatures and objects as if they were difficult terrain, but you take 1d10 force damage if you end your turn inside a creature or an object. While you're using your form of dread, once during each of your turns, when you deal necrotic damage to a creature, you regain hit points equal to half the amount of necrotic damage dealt. The once per long rest.
Yeah. So
a lot there.
Yeah. Lot to unpack. Go one at a time. First off, important thing to point out, this is concentration.
Yes.
That's extremely important because warlocks generally want to be concentrating on spells. This is, for all intents and purposes, a spell. A very good spell, but you kind of got to treat it like one and accept that, okay, I'm only concentrating on this. And your concentration can be broken if your spectral body's hit, yeah?
Yeah, damage is shared.
That sucks. That kind of blows.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's not over yet. This is still good. Right. But like that just right off the bat.
So you just start carrying on a cart with a barrel in it.
Okay.
And when battles break out, you dive into the barrel. So for like protection. And then you do this and then your spirit leaves and your body's just in the barrel.
That is good. Will, wasn't that one of your character's strategies?
Yes.
Yeah, I remember. And they were a warlock, I believe.
The fabled barrel warlock.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. So, yeah, I forgot or I didn't read the part where it says that you can return to your body or your body magically teleports to your spirit space. I mean, they don't have to be in a barrel. If you just start combat beforehand, or sorry, you start this beforehand and leave your body, you know, in the other room.
Yeah.
Then that's
a little risky, but yeah.
A little bit, yeah. Can be quite worthwhile.
Yeah. Or that also gives a lot of out of combat uses. Great for infiltrating, getting into things. Like, I mean, you can literally just walk through walls, barriers.
You can walk through walls, disappear, anything. And fly. You'll be much more unique than the other guys. Danny Phantom? Really? What? Is that too late for you guys?
I guess.
Oh, Danny Phantom was a great show. Underrated.
Yeah. Like a Nickelodeon kids show?
Yes. Like, well, I mean, like a young...
for young adults, Kevin.
Yeah, like teen show, all right?
All right. Yeah, we might have been in college at that point when you were watching it.
So, no, we weren't. I watched Danny Phantom.
You just didn't like my reference. Okay, that hurts worse. No, you could have just said you didn't know it.
But I wanted you to know.
I wanted it to hurt. Okay. Then actually looking at the benefits, there's a lot.
So resistance to bludgeoning, piercing, and slashing. Fantastic. No complaints there. Also really does add, again, to this could be a good melee warlock who takes Pact of the Blade. Yeah, the conjuration or necromancy spells not needing verbal, somatic, or material if it doesn't cost gold.
Doesn't matter.
It's...
No, let me tell you. Yeah. It doesn't matter. You want to know why? Because all of the best conjuration and necromancy spells are concentration. And you can't concentrate on other spells. Now, necromancy, there might be a couple of things here and there, but conjuration, you basically can teleport. That's like, you get Misty Step, Dimension Door. Those are some... I don't even know if warlocks get Misty Step, but besides the point, there's just not a ton of spells on that list that you're really going to want to cast in general, just off of conjuration or necromancy. Higher level, right. There's some
specifically
good stuff.
Warlock ones, yeah.
Yeah, I think... Like, if you're really, really high level, this can come up. Finger of Death is necromancy, and that being unable to be counterspelled is pretty cool.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it kind of makes sense. It's basically a subtle spell.
Yes.
But to do this, you're literally a ghost. So, I mean, you're kind of drawing attention to yourself anyways.
A little bit, a little bit.
Maybe, yeah, maybe just a little bit. Yeah, so people see that you're a ghost, but they will not know you're a ghost casting spells in the spooky crap that happens around you. They'll think, well, I didn't see this ghost gesturing and making incantations, so clearly it wasn't them.
Now,
that's how that would go.
If somebody casts invisibility on you first, you have greater invisibility, which is also concentration, so you can't cast it on yourself.
Right.
Yeah, it's the fact that these two schools, I really think most of them are going to be concentration that you want to cast.
Yeah. So, yeah. Okay. And you get a flying speed equal to your...
Oh, sorry. I was just going to say that when I first read this, I thought it was saying that those are the only spells you could cast. Like, only spells off of conjuration and necromancy. And I was like, that's horrible. This is the worst thing ever.
Right. All right. Then you get a flying speed equal to your rocket speed and can hover. And then this is where you can move through creatures and objects as if it was difficult terrain. So that's great. Yeah, I mean, no, just a good solid way to get flying speed. And again, as we talked about, infiltrating things, getting in, because then you can just teleport your body to. Do this through a locked door, teleport your body in, unlock it for the rest of the party. Things like that. Tons of creative uses there. And then, yeah, using the form of dread. Once on during each of your turns, when you deal necrotic damage to a creature, you gain hit points equal to half the amount of necrotic damage dealt. That's great. I love that, especially with the Grave Touched, where you could change your damage type to necrotic.
Yeah. This does make any necrotic damage, or sorry, any necromancy spells you can cast very appealing.
Yeah.
Also,
yeah, makes, they such Toll the Dead.
Yeah, makes Toll the Dead look really good, because at this point, you're 14th level, you've got 3d12 on Toll the Dead, plus the additional damage die if you've got Form of Dread up. So you're doing 4d12 damage and getting half of that back.
Well, it, the Grave Touch is just when you have an attack roll, they're making a save.
Oh. Wait, so which one's this? Grave Touch is...
Grave Touched.
When you hit a creature with an attack roll. Yes, you're right. That is important. So Toll the Dead wouldn't work.
But it's a separate... While you're using Form of Dread, you can roll one additional damage die when determining the necrotic damage the target takes.
It's all a part of one paragraph. So to me, that seems
it's a separate sentence. Though. Yeah, I would think it's probably related to when you use... Once per turn when you...
Okay, so are there...
I don't know. And a little weird.
Eldritch Blast would also have a charisma bonus to its damage. So... Arguably better.
But it's only one, so that's your 1d10, then you up it to 2d10. That's not nearly competing here, even with plus 5 charisma. Compared to 3d12? 4d12. 4d12. That wouldn't happen. It's not happening.
17th level.
I'm wondering if there's any necromancy spells that have a roll to attack. That warlocks get, which is so specific. Luckily, D&D Beyond has this exact thing that I can search. So it has to be not concentration. Damage. Does the damage have to be necrotic, or can it just be any...
For you can... what?
If we're changing the damage to necrotic because it's an attack roll, it could be any warlock spell that makes an attack roll. You could switch it to necrotic damage.
Right.
So this is like maybe not worth looking up, but to me, I just feel like there has to be one spell that you look at and go, wow, that'd be amazing to get half of that back as HP. Oh, we don't have much. All right.
Chill touch.
That's not great. Okay, well, it's not going to be on their actual spell list, I don't think. Maybe Mystic Arcana might do something. Blight? Is that an attack roll?
It's a constitution save. It's a save.
That's Blade of Disaster. Ninth level spell. Yeah, that's a melee spell attack.
Ninth level. Okay. I mean, you're not wrong.
Yeah, all right.
If you're up that high, it's still going to be, it's a good use of it.
Yeah, it's force damage, 4d12 force damage. So just switch it over to necrotic.
Yeah, I don't think there's much.
They crits at 18. Yeah. Oh, that's the one that could go through a wall of force.
There's not much. Yeah, no. I just went through the list here. No, warlocks
don't do a lot of attacks. It's basically Eldritch Blast.
So, not crazy powerful, which is probably good, because it could get a little out of hand if, let's just say, Blight was on the table. That'd be probably a little too strong.
Right.
That's still a lot of healing every turn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's every turn. Yeah, Toll the Dead. Or again, like a Greatsword attack. 2d6 plus 4, 5, or whatever. Switch it over to necrotic damage. Maybe 3d6, actually. Because you're using the Grave Touch to switch it over.
Extra.
Roll one additional damage die. And then, then you get half of that.
So, you'd rather use a Battle Axe for this one if you're getting an extra damage die.
Oh, yeah, there you go. You get to roll 3d12 plus your strength.
It's basically like you get a free crit every single turn. How about we put it like that? That's an amazing feature. And when you crit, it's even better.
Not 3d12. Yeah.
Yeah, 2d12. Yeah. And then if you crit, it would be 4d12.
That'd be
so
nice.
Yeah, that's really good.
Yes, and that does crit. There's been a lot of the new stuff where it's like, oh, you get this extra damage and like this specific wording. Sorry, can't. Stops you from critting. This one is you roll one additional damage die when determining the damage the target takes. That's very clearly crits.
Correct. It's when it says the words immediately after you hit a creature with an attack, that's when it does not crit. If you are adding the damage, if it says additional damage, that works. That crits.
Right. Or it sometimes does a clunky wording where like you get to add bonus damage equal to the amount of a 1d6 roll. It's like, yeah, that doesn't crit then. That one's weird.
It always says immediately after the attack, you get to add the bonus.
Yeah.
And that's I think, what I've determined is the triggering word to say you do not get this on a crit.
Right.
But overall, I mean, this is a strong ability. I think it's only limited by the fact that you're really going to want to take Warcaster. You do not want to lose your concentration on this. The longer it lasts, the better you're doing. If you do go Pact of the Blade and you go into this form, now, reminder, it is, you know, 14th level. You're basically a barbarian and critting every single turn with less health, less AC. Yeah, we can talk about that as much as we want. But damage-wise, right. you have a lot of overlap with the barbarian.
Yeah.
But you do have your body to worry about.
Worry about? Or just like, it's there.
Yes. Very vulnerable.
Yeah.
Keep that in mind. It's unconscious, so it's getting advantages, crits.
Any creature hits it, it's a crit. Any creature within 5 feet, yeah.
This is not a thing you want to leave just sitting in the middle of the battlefield.
Agreed.
You need to find a place this can you can hide your body, essentially.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or do it, yeah, prepare ahead of time, because this lasts for an hour.
Yeah. I'll call that a downside, too, just because if you were able to, as an action, just turn into this spirit and not have your body be a concern, then this would have zero drawbacks beyond the concentration, but that's not important. This, you have to prepare. You can't just drop your body in the middle of combat and say, hey, it's time for me to go ghost.
Right. Yeah, because you have no way to protect it then. Like, D&D doesn't really have much of that type of stuff.
Did I miss a our game does.
Yeah, you did miss. It's Danny Phantom's catchphrase. I know. Ghost. And Will just had this face. It was so upset. It was made me happy. Sorry. What were you saying,
this
Will?
This combined with your little the ball you gave us would actually be pretty friggin' obnoxious.
Yeah. Oh, jeez. Yeah, I was thinking about that, too.
Pocket dimension. Or, yeah, you're with a genie warlock. But then they have to be in there with you. Never mind.
That yeah, that would not work. Even in the pocket dimension thing, it's like you have to spend an action to get into this form, and then somebody else has to spend an action to open up the ball. And that just causes some weirdness. And if I'm being honest, I wouldn't let you guys do this. I would say, oh, it's on a different plane of existence, and that just causes problems. And I mean, I gave you this really powerful item, and I basically, when I gave it to you, I'm like, this might have some unintended consequences. So, you know, we'll see how it goes. This would be one of those.
A class that hadn't even been released yet happened.
Right.
You know, unintended consequences.
Right. So it does not say that it has to be on a different dimension, though. So here's a combo for you folks at home. Banish the body.
Ooh.
Choose to fail it. Go into a little pocket dimension. A lot of setup for it, but you can banish your own body. You can't. No, you can't. Concentration. But if somebody wants to banish your body, that is a funny way to get around this body on the battlefield problem. Which is like Panic at the Disco cover band.
Body on the battlefield.
And I'm sure there's some other ways. Some other,
yeah,
like, get rid of a body for a little bit things. The spells everyone needs. Cool. Still a little disappointed that you can't reattach limbs.
Uh-huh.
They should have grafted that onto this class.
Good wording. Good phrasing. I like it. Points to Will.
By the way, yes, that is the Undying capstone.
Great class.
Yes. Uh-huh.
I am really liking this. I think it is powerful. I think it has abilities that are fun, useful.
The undead, yeah.
Thought-provoking. I mean, you're saying the...
Gameplay changing,
yes.
This is a very obvious to play Warlock. The Undying one was... you just got nothing.
No.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sorry, Kevin. You might have been saying the capstone for the Undying. That one sucks. Yes.
Yes. Yeah. No, over. I love this one. I think it'll be a lot of fun to play. A lot of versatility in how you could do it. No real complaints. But yeah, not so over the top that it feels like broken.
No. It's like it's close too. It not only toes the line of mortality, it toes the line of balance, but I think it finds it. No points for that one. All right, that's fine. It wasn't very good.
I thought you were... The tone of your voice made me think you were going into pitching to one of our affiliates.
No. Why would I just... expected. Why would I just mislead people and then start talking about one of our affiliates? That'd be ridiculous. I'm not going to do it. I know you think that I'm gearing up for it, but I'm not going to do it.
Okay.
But if I was going to do it, I'd obviously talk about our affiliate, Metallic Dice Games. And they make dice and dice accessories, and you can get 10% off your order using the code MM10. But I'm not going to do that. I wouldn't just mislead people and lull them into a sense of false security just to hit them with a coupon code that can make their purchase 10% cheaper. It stacks with sales. You see a sale on there, it's an additional 10% off, and you get to help out the show. So, yeah.
But you wouldn't do that.
I would not do that. So instead,
no, definitely not pointing out how they have like a wide range of dice, and you can find like cool warlocky ones to fit with the undead warlock.
Yeah,
like some necrotic dice you get to roll, but no, we don't want to mislead people.
And I would also not add on the fact that they have gemstone dice, which are kind of pricey, but beautiful, beautiful dice that you can also get 10% off on. Code works on that too, MM10. But instead, I'm going to talk about our affiliate, Metallic Dice Games, where you can get 10%. This is confusing. I don't know where I'm going with that. We'll call it there. I'll call that a promotion. If you want to support the show, check out Metallic Dice Games. Also, go to monstersmulticlass.com/support, where you can find our other affiliates, as well as our Patreon, which I will now list off the names of those people: Jeff W, Joe P, Vincent M, Isaac M, Sentinel D20, Star Shinobi, Adam A, and Home Bakery. You all are awesome. Thank you so much. And if you want to check out our Patreon, monstersmulticlass.com/support, make sure to like the video, leave a comment. If you're not watching a video, you're probably on the podcast, which means you should leave a 5-star review. Why haven't you left a 5-star review? Or a 1-star review? Whatever star review you think we deserve, go ahead and leave it, because I'm not allowed to ask for 5-star reviews. Kevin gets mad at me. And that's it. Just help us out. Spread us by word of mouth.
Cool. Thanks for watching.